So welcome everybody to Lakes and Bethel. This is my third take on this message today, so I should get most of it right. But we have an early service at 9 o'clock here, and I did that one. Then we usually record and make this video in the second service. And today I didn't make a backup because I haven't used a backup in months. And of all things, the first Sunday that I don't use a backup, the camera doesn't work right. So that's what we're up to today. Hopefully this video will be posted by 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. All right, so I want to talk about happiness today and how that can be quite elusive. You know, we just got back from the Iowa State Fair, which is kind of interesting. You know, people are really quite happy at the State Fair. That's a happy place in Des Moines there. It's pretty cool. And, you know, you can tell there's really two groups of people that go to this fair. In the morning, you get senior citizens like us. And at about 3 or 4 in the afternoon, the next shift comes in. And those are all younger people who are there in a definite party mode. But at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, us mature people tend to be a little tired and cranky. If you notice from this slide, this girl was showing a dairy cow, and she just got pooped and decided to take a nap right on that box there. Now, that doesn't look very comfortable to me, but she apparently needed the rest. And then you have this old boy. He's got the right idea. He's showing beef cattle, and he's just zonked out. He's taking a nap. That can at the base of the picture on the screen there, that is not Pepsi Cola. He's not drinking that. But, you know, at 3 in the afternoon, people generally don't look that happy. They're hot and they're tired. Diane and I walked, according to my phone, 6 miles a day. So, yeah, we looked a little grumpy by 3 in the afternoon, too. And then there's folks there that look very much at peace. There's folks there that at 3 in the afternoon look really happy, who've been there all day. And these are the volunteers. It's an interesting thing. This Methodist church has had this cafe there for years. Now, this little girl here, by the way, is one that didn't look very happy either. She just wasn't getting her way, and she kind of looks like she's about to pronounce a curse on whoever was talking to her there. But I just like that picture. But anyway, back to the Methodists. They have this booth there. It's really kind of a cafe. It's, as the sign says, since 1949. I remember going there as a kid and getting sausage and our biscuits and gravy. And it's really good stuff. And it fills you right up after 3 or 4 servings. But you see that lady standing by the cash register there. I've been going there long enough to know that I remember her when her hair was black. And she's always in such a good mood. And so a few years ago, I talked to her, and I said, "Now, how long is your shift here?" And she goes, "Well, it's at least 8 hours, usually 12. And I thought, "Now, how in the world does she do this?" But she says, "Well, it's all about serving people and about serving my church, and I just really like doing that." Now, Jesus talked about the same thing. You know, he talked about service many different times, but this one from Matthew 16 is particularly relevant to this whole thing about happiness being elusive. Then Jesus said to his disciples, "If any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way, take up your cross, and follow me. If you're trying to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake, you will save it. And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world but lose your own soul?" See, it seems that we are created to give. That's what we're made for. When we do things for ourselves, our soul shrivels up and dies. But when you're doing things for other people, your soul prospers. My favorite shrink is Henry Cloud. And it's a familiar name. He's written several books. One of his books is called The Law of Happiness. It's just a little book. It's probably a 2-hour read. It's very good, and it's helped numerous people deal with minor depression, things like that. But he has some interesting stats in that book. He says that, and he's gotten this information from other research psychologists, he says that our mental health, our mental well-being, 50% of that is based on our genetic makeup, you know, on how you're wired. It's just the way it is. But he said only 10% has to do with external circumstances. 10% of how we feel mentally is based on things that are going on around us. And I've seen this personally from time to time. I've gone to the hospital to visit someone, pray with someone who is dying of pancreatic cancer. Painful way to go. And I've also, in fact, on the same day, gone in and seen somebody there who was there for just a minor procedure. The cancer patient is happy, is content, has accepted what's going on, and the other person was just as cranky as the dickens. So the externals don't really affect us that much. Now, 40% is intentional activity. That means choosing to serve. 40% of your mental health is based on that, intentional activity. And that works for me. See, because I'm wired to see the glass as half empty, not half full. And when I serve, the world is a brighter place. Because I have to realize it's not about me. It's not about my best life now. See, things go wrong if I focus on myself. And my best life is when I'm focused on others. See, God has us all wired to give of ourselves. And when we do, we have abundant living. Jesus talked about this. He said, the thief, who is the devil, the thief's purpose is to steal and kill and destroy. My purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. There used to be a fellow around here by the name of Ken Dexter. He's passed on several years ago. And he taught me a lot of things. He was kind of a handyman around the building here. He tackled just about any job. And he taught me a lot of things. You know, they always say that churches affect pastors a lot more than pastors affect churches, and I think that's definitely true. But he said that his job was miserable. He worked at a local manufacturer, and when he was doing it only for himself, only to make a living, he hated his job. But then one day he decided he was going to start working for the company, and he started doing things for the best for the company he was working for, and then it became enjoyable. He was working for his employer's benefit, and then he became content. And the principle works like that in most relationships. Marriage is much happier if you work to please your spouse rather than yourself. If all you're doing in a marriage is serving yourself, it doesn't go very well. Sibling rivalry, which I'm very familiar with, melts away if you do things for your siblings instead of for yourself. We are created to serve. And when we don't serve, we're miserable. When we serve, we are content and happy. So the choice is obvious. Now, Henry Cloud also talks about the difference between narcissists and philanthropists. And he says some really interesting things about that. You know, a narcissist is an extremely self-centered person who has an exaggerated sense of self-importance. You know, we know politicians like that, don't we? And it's an interesting, narcissists are rarely happy people. They can pretend to be happy, but they're not. A philanthropist, on the other hand, is a person who gives money, time, skills, or resources to help others and improve human welfare without seeking personal profit. Now, the interesting thing is a philanthropist doesn't have to be wealthy. They just have to be willing to serve and willing to give. The philanthropist is content. The narcissist is miserable. Which one do you want to be? Well, following the Ten Commandments will help you move from being a narcissist to a philanthropist. So today we're on the Ten Commandments, part three. The first four commandments talk about our relationship with God. The six later commandments talk about our relationships with humans. Today we're going to look at commandments 5 through 9. The 10th is next Sunday. That's on coveting, which is a kind of a heavy duty one. So we're going to talk about that. I want to make sure I had enough time anyway. So we're doing that next Sunday. Now I want you all to see the 10 commandments as words of wisdom. Following the 10 commandments will make your life much better. So here we go from Exodus chapter 20. Honor your father and mother. Then you'll live a long, full life in the land the Lord your God is giving you. That's the fifth commandment. Now, what exactly does it mean to honor someone? Does that mean accolades and flattery? No, it doesn't. It means to value them as the ones who gave you life. To honor in Hebrew literally means to add weight to. Now, those of us who grew up in the 60s and 70s can remember that kind of hippie expression, oh, that's really heavy, man. And that's kind of what this means. It's something that's really important to you. So this commandment says, take your parents seriously. Now, what if your parents were abusive? Or what if they were cold and unloving? What if your parents are overly critical, as many parents are? The commandment says to honor them. To honor them, you don't have to be like them. You're told to honor them, not emulate them. If your father, for instance, was a Nazi, you don't have to honor the Nazi platform. But you do need to treat him with respect. You can disagree without disrespect, and then things will go better for you. This commandment's also about how to treat the elderly. How to take care of them. You're taking care of those who can't take care of themselves. I stopped in on my mother last week. She's 94 years old. She's 90% blind, and she's had dementia for 25 years. She's had dementia already when she was my age. She needs constant care. And that's what this commandment is about, is taking care of those who can't take care of themselves. And this law, this commandment is is not about you. It's to protect your parents and the parents of others. So the next commandment is you must not murder. This is number 6. In Hebrew, it sounds really cool. It's lo tertzak. And it's been translated in many of the older versions of the Bible as thou shalt not kill. That is a mistranslation. It should be the you shall not murder. Sometimes killing is necessary. If, for instance, somebody breaks into your house and wants to harm your daughter and is in the process of doing that, this law does not apply. If it's self-defense, this law does not apply. It's much deeper than that. Now, Jesus went further in defining this in the Sermon on the Mount. He said this: you're familiar with the command to the ancients, do not murder. I'm telling you that anyone who is so much as angry with a brother or sister is guilty of murder. Carelessly call a brother idiot, and you just might find yourself hauled into court. Thoughtlessly yell stupid at a sister, and you are on the brink of hellfire. The simple moral fact is that words kill. So Jesus here rightly defines that anger is the root of murder. And unmet expectations are the root of anger. If somebody doesn't behave the way we think they should, we get angry. If someone doesn't live up to our standards, we become disgusted. This is the root of murder, and Jesus condemns it. He says, you know, no name calling. Well, we'd have to get rid of, if we were going to enforce this, we'd have to get rid of all political ads. Certain politicians need to learn this. Should name calling is never appropriate. Life is better without anger. But this law, again, is not about you. It's to protect your neighbor. And here we come to everybody's favorite commandment, number 7. You must not commit adultery. In Hebrew, that's pronounced lo ten off. Now, there's a former practice in Reformed and Christian Reformed churches, particularly those west of Detroit, that was an abominable practice in its day. But it wasn't that long ago. It was about the time I was born. Now, I heard this story from some folks in my first church in Harrison, South Dakota. There was a war widow there, a young gal whose husband had gotten killed in World War II, and she had one child, a little 2-year-old girl. And there was another guy that came back from the war, and he went to work as a mail carrier. And then this young widow started having a relationship with the mailman. Talk about stories about the mailman. This actually happened. She ended up pregnant. They wanted to get married. And so what had to happen before they could get married, they wanted a church wedding. She was a member of the New Holland Christian Reformed Church, which was just 4 miles straight west of where I was at. Her future husband, the mailman, had to stand up in front of that congregation and confess to the sin of adultery. I don't think that would work today. But is that ancient history? No, it's not. I ordained this guy to the office of elder, the mailman. And Diane and I have had dinner with this family several times in South Dakota. See, the problem is that adultery means to break a vow. You cannot commit adultery unless you've taken a vow. In order for adultery to take place, at least one of the participants in the sexual tryst has to be married. But again, the purpose of this law was not to curtail illicit sexual activity. In those days, adultery was considered theft. Men stealing someone else's wife who was his property. And remember, in those days, they had no paternity tests. So you could get stuck raising someone else's kid. Or that kid could inherit your estate, which you didn't want to have happen. But again, this law is not about you. It's about protecting your neighbor. Adultery causes all kinds of heartache. It causes all kinds of divorces. And as one woman told me just recently, divorce is worse than death because there's a constant reminder of someone who rejected you for someone else. She said it would have been easier on her if he had died. And that's just her opinion, but it's how she felt. So the next commandment, you must not steal. That's number 8. In Hebrew, it's pronounced lo tignof. And it's obvious what this is about. Don't take stuff that isn't yours. Again, it's not about you. It's about your neighbor having the best life now. And when you help your neighbor, your life is better. Here comes number 9. You must not testify falsely against your neighbor. Now that's legal language, and what it means is exactly what it says. Don't testify falsely in a court of law. Now this commandment has been interpreted as a prohibition of all untrue language. And if we were to enforce that, again, we'd have to get rid of all the political ads that are on TV now and all the big pharma ads. In fact, we'd have to get rid of most advertising. Because most advertising is fiction. But that's not what this is about. It's about lying under oath to get someone else in trouble. So, once again, the Ten Commandments are not about you having your best day. They're about your neighbor having her best day. And these commandments are not for the self-centered. They are for those who are God-centered and other-centered. So in your prayers, as we talked about earlier in this service, ask God what you can do today to make his day better. In your prayers, ask God to show you how to make your neighbor's day better. The commandments are guidelines, they're guardrails to help you do that. For instance, if you want to bless your neighbor, you're not going to murder him or even hate him. If you want to bless your neighbor, you're not going to sleep with your neighbor's spouse. If you want to be a blessing to your neighbor, you're not going to steal his stuff. And if you want to be a blessing to your neighbor, you're not going to lie about your neighbor in court. It seems that God has created us to live in community. Now, we have a couple of jobs as followers of Jesus. Our first job is to take care of ourselves so that no one else has to. And then you take care of those who need the help. When we do so, the joy of living shows up. When we do so, each day is filled with contentment. Now, I'm going to throw a what if out. This is propositional theology. Speculation of students is what this is. I'm not trying to formulate new doctrine. But let's just think for a moment. What if every human being is born saved? Every human being is born saved. I'm not saying that's true. It's just a proposition at this point. And that you remain saved until you reject God. Now, that would be a comforting theology to have with people who die in infancy, things like that. And then once you grow up and you reject God, well, then you're done. Because God doesn't want prisoners, so most likely there's a hell, and that's where you go when you reject God. When you say, no, I don't want your grace anymore. Now, violating the Ten Commandments is a way of rejecting God. See, God gives us the best way to live, and the Ten Commandments are part of that way. So I hope you will know these Ten Commandments, that you'll follow them, because when you do, you're going to avoid all kinds of heartache, and God will bless you for it. So that's all I have to say about these. Next week, we're going to tackle the Tenth Commandment. And then we're going to start after that some themes from Genesis. I intend to do a message on Noah's Ark, which I have never done before. I'm having fun doing this. I hope you all are too. In the services today, I only saw one or two people sleeping, so that's always a good sign. But what we want is we want you to know this stuff. I'm trying to make you all into Bible scholars. And I hope you're enjoying it in the process. So we'll see you next time.